Early the following morning we shared a light meal in Lizia's home. As her children were about to take their leave and go off to their jobs, Laura announced to me cheerfully. I have arranged company for you today. Raphael, an old friend of ours who works at the Ministry of Regeneration, will call for you at my request. You may accompany him to the ministry, and there he will introduce you to Minister Genesius in my name. I could find no words to express my gratitude. I was radiant. Lysias was also pleased, and embraced me warmly on leaving. On kissing her son goodbye, Laura recommended that Lysias tell Minister Clarence that she would be along as soon as Raphael came for me. Her generosity touched me deeply, leaving me tongue-tied with emotion. When we were alone, my devoted hostess addressed me kindly. My brother, new paths are opening to you today. Since your mother doesn't live with us here in the Astral City, I hope you won't mind my taking her place in this moment to offer you a little motherly advice. Indeed, I am most grateful. I exclaimed, moved, I shall never be able to express the extent of my appreciation for your kindness. Laura smiled and added. I heard that you asked for work some time ago. Yes, yes, I did. I agreed, remembering Clarence's words on the subject. I also know that you didn't obtain it then, but instead were given permission to visit different ministries which connect us more with the Earth. It is in this regard that, pleading my greater experience, I would like to offer you a few suggestions. Now that you are finally allowed to frequent different departments of work as a preliminary stage of apprenticeship, try to curb, as much as possible, all impulses of mere curiosity. Don't be like a moth, fluttering about from light to light. I realize that the sense of intellectual search is very strong in you. As a studious physician, always in quest of new discoveries and problems, it wouldn't be difficult in your present position to drift along undesirable channels. Remember that there are many lessons to be learned far more precious and beneficial than mere analysis of things. Even a healthy curiosity may, at times, be dangerous. Resolute, loyal spirits may overcome these obstacles and accomplish edifying tasks, but the timid and inexperienced ones may encounter pain and bitterness. Clarence has offered you a permit to visit the ministries, beginning with regeneration. Instead of giving vent to your curiosity, study the different lines of activities with searching attention, and lend a willing hand at the first opportunity should you be offered a chance to render a service, however humble, in this ministry. Don't worry about acquainting yourself with the routine of the other ministries. Try to gain the goodwill of all those around you, bearing in mind that the spirit of investigation should always be second to the spirit of service. To pry into one's neighbor's occupations without possessing the due credentials of good service might be considered a great impertinence. Numerous failures in material achievements have their roots in such anomalies. Everyone is ready to be a spectator, yet rare are those willing to accomplish something. Nothing but edifying work endows the spirit with the indispensable merit to claim any new prerogatives. There is plenty of hard work in the Ministry of Regeneration, because the lowest region of our spiritual colony is located there. All groups of generous entities entrusted with the most arduous missions are recruited from its working staff. But those lowly tasks are in no way humiliating. Remember that in all our planes, from the Earth to the highest spheres in the most spiritually evolved zones, in relation to the planet Earth, the greatest worker is the Master Jesus himself, and he wasn't ashamed to wield a heavy saw in a carpenter's shop. Minister Clarence has kindly allowed you to learn, analyze and appreciate these values, but you may, as a wise worker, convert this period of observation into a stage of useful service. Those in authority may justly refuse a request for some special line of work whose practice is legitimately reserved for those who are duly qualified for it through great efforts and much suffering, but they will most certainly accept cooperation of the spirit of goodwill, from those anxious to serve in any capacity. These words, spoken in an affectionate motherly voice, sank into my heart like soothing balm. Seldom in my life had I met such a deep, brotherly interest for my fate. Deeply affected by this wise exhortation, I listened with moist eyes. As if anxious to temper the seriousness of her warning, Laura added encouragingly, "The ability to begin anew is one of the most sublime lessons we may learn. Very few indeed are those who fully understand it, and extremely rare are the incarnate men who distinguish themselves in that line. We must remember, however, the name of Paul of Tarsus. A learned member of the Sanhedrin, and the hope of his people and enjoying an enviable position in Jerusalem, one day retired into the desert to begin his human experience again as a humble weaver. I could no longer contain myself and took both her hands in mine like a son, and covered them with my grateful tears." Lysias' mother, gazing into the distance, spoke softly, "I am also grateful, my brother. I believe you weren't brought into this house by a blind stroke of fate. We are all bound by secular ties of affection. I shall soon return to the physical sphere, but we shall continue united by the bonds of our hearts. I hope to see you busy and happy before my departure. Please remember that this house is your home. Work with good cheer and put your trust in God." I raised my eyes to her kind face and experienced the joy that is born of a pure spiritual friendship. I had the impression of having known her as a devoted friend for a long time, although I tried in vain to place her among my earliest recollections. Grateful, I felt like kissing her again and again, but just then there was a knock at the door. With a look of maternal affection, Laura said, "It must be Raphael coming for you. Go now, my friend, and think of Jesus. Work hard for the good of others. It is the only way of finding your own." Chapter 26, New Perspectives. Turning over the wise suggestions of Lysias' mother in my mind, I left with Raphael certain that I was about to begin, not the prospective visits of observation, but a term of apprenticeship and useful service. I noted with surprise the imposing beauty of the new district we passed through on our way to where I was to be introduced to Minister Genesius. I was not in my usual inquisitive mood, I experienced instead a form of mental activity which was new to me, and I followed Raphael in silence. Wrapped in fervent prayer, I besought Jesus to assist me in these new ways, so that I might not lack work and the strength to accomplish it. Adverse as I had formerly been to the practice of prayer, I now turned to it as a valuable sentimental mainstay to my determination to serve. From time to time, Raphael cast a curious look at me, as if he did not expect such an attitude on my part. The Airbus stopped in front of a large building and we descended in silence. In a few minutes we were shown into the minister's office. Genesius was an affable old man, whose countenance revealed uncommon energy. Raphael introduced me kindly. "Oh, yes," said the gracious minister, "so, this is our brother Andre?" "At your service," I answered. "Laura has told me about your coming. Please, don't stand upon ceremony." Meanwhile, Raphael respectfully took his leave and gave me an encouraging handshake. He left hurriedly, as he was urgently expected at his work. Genesius then turned his clear eyes to me and said, "Clarence has already mentioned you with interest. The Ministry of Assistance frequently sends us groups of its residents on visits of observation, which, as a rule, are transformed into periods of service." I understood his subtle allusion, and replied, "That's exactly what I greatly desire. I have prayed for the divine forces to assist my feeble spirit, so that my stay in this ministry might also be converted into a period of apprenticeship." My words seemed to have touched Genesius, therefore, availing myself of the moment, I begged him, "Worthy minister, I realize now that my passage through the Ministry of Assistance was due exclusively to God's mercy, perhaps in answer to my devoted mother's constant intercessions. But I also realize that up to the present moment I have received innumerable benefits without offering the least useful retribution. Surely my place is here amidst the redeeming activities. Please, if possible, let my permission to visit be transformed into the possibility to serve. Now I understand as never before the urgent necessity of redeeming myself. I have wasted too much time in useless vanities and misspent a tremendous amount of energy in ridiculous self-worship. He noticed that I was speaking sincerely. When I had asked Clarence for work, I was not yet clear on what I wanted. I had certainly wanted to work, but perhaps not to serve. I had not yet realized the value of time, or learnt to appreciate the sublime blessing of opportunity. I suppose the truth of it was that I really wished to continue being what I had been until then, the proud and respected physician, a slave to my preposterous claims of self, imprisoned within my own opinions. Now, after all I had seen and heard, and realizing the responsibility of each child of God in the infinite scheme of creation, I gave utterance to the best there was in me. At last I was sincere. I was not in the least worried about the kind of work I was to do, but really anxious to carry it out in the sublime spirit of service. He looked at me with questioning eyes. "Are you really the former doctor?" "Yes, I am," I answered timidly. Genesius was silent for some time before speaking, as if adjusting himself to my unexpected attitude. "Your resolutions are most praiseworthy," he said at last. "May the Lord help you to adhere to them." And, as if anxious to raise my spirit with new hope, he continued. "When the disciple is ready, the Father sends the Master. The same occurs with work. When one is willing to serve, he never lacks opportunities. In your case, my friend, divine providence has been extremely generous. You are eager to serve, you understand your responsibility and accept your duty. Such attitude is undoubtedly leading you to the accomplishment of your wishes. On the physical plane, many applaud the person who attains financial prosperity or an outstanding position. Here, however, the case is different. To us, comprehension, effort and sincere humility are the things that really matter." Sensing my anxious expectation, he added, "It's quite possible for you to obtain work. However, for the time being, it would be wiser for you to frequent our numerous departments, and to observe and study their different activities." Then he contacted the next office, saying aloud, "I should like to see Tobias before he goes down to the Chambers of Rectification." In a few minutes, a gentleman with pleasant manners came into the room. "Tobias," exclaimed Genesius courteously, "here is a friend who came from the Ministry of Assistance for a period of observation. I believe a visit to the Chambers of Rectification would be greatly beneficial to him." I offered the newcomer my hand, which he grasped firmly, saying affably, "At your service." "Take him with you," continued the minister kindly. "André must become thoroughly acquainted with our different activities. Please see that he is granted every available opportunity." "I am on my way there now," Tobias added obligingly, "if you wish to accompany me." "Certainly," I answered eagerly. I took my leave of the minister, who addressed me with further inspiring words of encouragement. Then I resolutely followed Tobias, and together we walked along great city blocks, whose numerous buildings gave me the impression of busy centers of work. Perceiving my silent questions, my new friend informed, "These are the great plants of the astral city. Here, over 100,000 spirits are employed in the preparation of juices and in the manufacture of woven goods and all kinds of commodities, while working at the same time at their own rehabilitation and enlightenment." In a few minutes we entered an imposing building. After crossing long galleries where numerous workers hurried to and from, we came to a monumental stairway leading to the lower floors. "Let's descend," said Tobias gravely. Noting my surprise, he added solicitously, "The Chambers of Rectification are located closer to the lower zone. On first arriving in the astral city, the unfortunate entities who are lodged here cannot bear either light or open air." Chapter 27, Work at Last. Never could I have pictured the scene now before my eyes. It was neither hospital nor a conventional nursing home, but a series of vast intercommunicating wards crowded with carcass-like human forms. A strange clamoring filled the air, groans, sobs and plaintive phrases uttered at random. Ghastly faces, bony hands and monstrous bore witness to their terrible spiritual misery. So upsetting were my first impressions that I had to resort to prayer to keep my strength. Tobias called an old nurse. "There are so few assistants today," he asked, surprised. "What has happened?" "Minister Flaccus sent word that most of them were to accompany the Samaritans on their rounds in the regions of the Lower Zone, which is an organization of spirit benefactors in the Astral City," a note by the spirit author. "Well, there," Tobias decided calmly, "we must fill the gaps. There is no time to waste." "Brother Tobias, Brother Tobias, have mercy," cried out an old man, clutching the bed and gesticulating like a madman. "I am suffocating. This is 1,000 times worse than death on earth. Help. I want to leave this place, to get out. I must have air, more air." Tobias approached and examined him carefully, and inquired, "Why is Ribeiro so much worse?" "He was had one of his worst crises," informed the nurse. "Assistant Gonsalves attributes it chiefly to the heavy charge of dense thoughts emitted by his incarnate relations. As he is still very weak and lacks the mental strength to break away from his earthly ties, the poor creature has not been able to resist their influence." While Tobias gently stroked the patient's forehead, the nurse continued, "Early this morning, he rushed out of the ward, crying loudly that he was needed at home, that he couldn't forget his wife and children, that it was cruel to keep him here away from them. Lawrence and Hermes tried in vain to bring him back to bed. Therefore, I thought that it would be in his best interests to take away his energy and mobility, which I did by applying some prostrating magnetic passes to him." "You did well," agreed Tobias thoughtfully. "I will see that measures are taken against the influence of his family's attitude. They must be given a greater share of worries so that they may leave Ribeiro in peace." I looked intensely at the patient, trying to determine his emotional state. He wore the typical expression of the mentally deranged and seemed utterly unconscious of what was being said about him. He called Tobias automatically, as do children who know their benefactor. My new instructor, noting my amazement, explained, "The poor thing is still in a nightmarish phase, during which the soul is wrapped up in its own afflictions, with little perception of anything else. Man, my friend, reaps exactly what he has sown. Our poor Ibero has been a prey to numerous illusions." I wanted to ask about his history and the source of his sufferings, but remembering Laura's advice on curiosity, I kept my peace. Tobias addressed the patient with kind words of encouragement and hope, and promised he would see to the means of improving his condition, that for his own good he should calm down and take his confinement in bed patiently. Ribeiro, trembling pitiably and ghastly pale, smiled sadly and thanked him with tears in his eyes. We walked slowly along, between numerous rows of well-kept beds. Unwholesome exhalations filled the place, caused, I later learned, by the mental emanations of those who were still under the painful impression of physical death, or dominated by the low vibrations of inferior thoughts. These wards are used exclusively for male entities. "Tobias, Tobias, I am parched and starving," shouted a patient. "Help me, brother," yelled another. "For the love of God, I can't stand this any longer," cried out a third. My heart was heavy before so much suffering, and I could not help asking, "My friend, how sad it is to see all these sufferings and tormented spirits. Why must there exist such a dismal place?" Tobias replied with perfect composure, "In observing this scene, you must try to see beyond the pain and isolation. Remember, brother, that these patients have already left the lower zones, where so many pitfalls lie in wait for those who have heedlessly neglected their spirit selves. In these chambers, patients are not only cared for, they are also prepared for their future redemption. We must bear in mind that their suffering is of their own doing. Man's life is always centered wherever his heart is. And, After a pause during which he seemed deaf to the clamoring around us, he added, "They are smugglers of eternal life." "What do you mean?" I asked. "They expected mere earthly acquisitions to have the same value in the spirit spheres. They believed that criminal pleasures, the power of money, infringement of the law and the imposition of self would cross the frontiers of the sepulchre and still be in force here, offering them new opportunities for further follies. They were thoughtless businessmen who forgot to exchange their material acquisitions for spiritual currency. When in the flesh, they traveled to a foreign city, they always took care to provide themselves with the currency of the country which they visit. Yet, while certain of the inevitability of the final trip to the spiritual regions, they neglected to acquire spiritual values. Thus the millionaire of the physical sphere becomes the spiritual pauper." How true! Tobias' words could not have been more logical. After distributing comfort and hope, he led me to the next ward. Narcisa, the nurse, followed us and deferentially opened the door. As I entered, I nearly staggered with heart-sickening surprise. It was a chamber of vast proportions where 32 men, with sinister countenances, lay quite still on very low beds. Their almost unnoticeable breath was the only sign of life they presented. These unhappy entities are in a sleep much heavier than that of most of our ignorant brothers. We call them the negative believers, for instead of accepting the Lord, they were unconditional slaves of self. Instead of believing in life, action and work, they admitted only the victory of crime, immobility and eternal nothing. They transformed their earthly experience into the constant preparation for a long slumber, and as they had no notion of good, of brotherly cooperation, there is nothing left for them now but to sleep on for years and years as helpless victims of ghastly nightmares. I was horrified at these explanations and stared at Tobias, who began to carefully apply strengthening passes on the patients. When the treatment on the first two was over, they both began vomiting a black substance, a dark and viscous matter with cadaverous emanations. "They are expelling poisonous fluids," explained Tobias calmly. Narcisa was doing her best to keep up with the cleaning, but in vain, for by this time a great number of them had begun expelling the same dark and fetid matter. It was then that I instinctively got hold of the cleaning implements and set myself to work. The nurse seemed thankful for my help, and Tobias threw me a glance that well expressed his satisfaction and gratitude. The work continued throughout the day, bringing with it a blessed fatigue. No friend in the physical world could possibly appreciate the sublime joy of the physician recommencing his self-education from the humblest of nursing tasks. Chapter 28, On Duty. After the collective prayer in the evening, Tobias turned on the receiver to listen to the Samaritans at work in the lower zones. I learned that the patrols of workers on such missions communicated with their headquarters at set hours. I felt somewhat tired from my strenuous efforts, but my heart was singing with joy. At last I had work to do and was experiencing the mysteriously invigorating tonic of service. A few minutes after the set had been tuned in, I heard a strange voice. "Samaritans to the Ministry of Regenerations. Samaritans to the Ministry of Regeneration. Heavy labor in the abysses of darkness. We have succeeded in dislodging a great number of unfortunate entities and have rescued 29 brothers from spirit shadows. 22 are mentally deranged and 7 in utter psychic exhaustion. Our patrols are preparing transportation. We'll arrive soon after midnight. Please see to the necessary arrangements." I noticed that Narcisa and Tobias exchanged significant glances, and when the broadcast ended I asked, "What do they mean? Why this collective transportation? Aren't they all spirits?" Tobias smiled and replied, "You forget, brother, that you yourself arrived at the Ministry of Assistance in such a manner. I know all about your coming. We must bear in mind that in the lower zone, just as on Earth, we are clothed in heavy fluids. The ostrich and the swallow are both birds and have wings. Yet the former can't rise into the air unless transported, whereas the latter will rise to the sky in swift flight. As if to make it known that there was no time for digressions, he turned to Narciso and said, "Tonight's group is a large one. We must take immediate measures. We will need more beds," she exclaimed somewhat anxiously. "Don't worry," answered Tobias resolutely, "the mentally deranged patients will be lodged in Pavilion 7 and the weak ones in Ward 33. Raising his right hand to his forehead as if trying to make an important decision, he remarked, "The problem of lodging will be easily settled, but the ones concerning assistance won't be so quickly solved. Because of the dark clouds obscuring the world of the incarnate, our strongest workers have been detailed to reinforce the services of the Ministry of Communication. We need helpers for night duty, because those working with the Samaritans will return extremely tired. I would be happy to lend a hand to the best of my ability," I exclaimed spontaneously. Tobias gave me a look of appreciative gratitude which filled my heart with gladness. "But have you really made up your mind to stay in the chambers during the night?" he asked, surprised. "Aren't others doing the same?" I inquired in turn. "I am feeling strong and fit, and must make up for lost time." My new friend patted me on the back, saying, "Well then, I accept your cooperation. Narciso and the others will also stay on duty. Moreover, I'll send you Venantius and Salustius, two of our most dependable brothers. I myself can't remain here tonight, because of a previous engagement, but I will leave a careful plan of the work to be done. If anything unexpected should turn up, you or any of the assistants can get in touch with me." We all set about making the most urgent arrangements. While Narciso, aided by five attendants, prepared the linen and nursing equipment, Tobias and I moved heavy pieces of furniture into Pavilion 7 and Ward 33. I would be at loss to explain what was happening to me. Although physically tired, I felt exultantly happy. In the office or workshop, where most are anxious to undertake their tasks to the best of their ability, to serve is the highest privilege. In truth, the hour bonus and any other immediate reward I might gain for my efforts was far from my mind. Yet I was deeply satisfied at the thought that in my new position as a humble but worthy worker, I would no longer be ashamed to face my mother or my benefactors in the Ministry of Assistance. On leaving, Tobias again embraced me, saying, "May the peace of Jesus abide with you all. I wish you a good night of profitable work. Tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. you may rest. In ordinary times, 12 hours of work is the most we may put in, but these are unusual circumstances." I replied that I was extremely content with his decision. Later, along with a great number of nurses and attendants, I began to take a more kindly interest in the patients. Among my co-workers, Narciso, with her spontaneous kindness and maternal solicitude, greatly impressed me. I was attracted by her generosity and tried to come into closer contact with her. It was easy, and I soon found myself enjoying the pleasure of her simple but edifying conversation. The dear old woman was like a living book whose every page breathed devotion and wisdom. "But sister, have you been working here for long?" I inquired after a few minutes of friendly conversation. "Yes, I have been in active service in the chambers of rectification for 6 years and a few months, and must continue here for over 3 more years being able to fulfill my purpose." At my questioning look, she continued, "I need a serious endorsement." "Endorsement? What do you mean?" I asked, interested. "You see, I must meet some beloved spirits who are reincarnated on the earth, so that together we may work out our advancement. Because of my past errors, I begged for a long time in vain for the opportunity to carry out my plans. I was living in an anxious and perturbed condition. One day I was advised to speak with Minister Veneranda. She agreed to endorse my plans, on the condition that I work here for 10 years to correct certain unbalanced emotional attitudes. I considered the imposition too hard at first, and felt like refusing, but I gradually realized that she was right. After all, that corrective measure was meant to benefit me, not her. I can't tell you how much I have profited by having accepted Veneranda's advice. I feel more balanced and understanding now, and I believe I shall live my next experience on the physical sphere with spiritual dignity.